Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Today on Edgewise, our guest is Stephen Pressfield, author of several books of historical fiction. You might be most familiar with The Legend of Bagger Vance, which was converted into a Hollywood motion picture, and The Gates of Fire. That has to do with the Spartans at the gates of Thermopylae. Very well known, highly regarded. But the reason we're talking to him today is a brand new little volume that he's put together called Do the Work. And it's published as part of the Domino Project that Seth Godin started not too long ago with Amazon. Stephen, welcome to Edgewise.
Thanks very much for having me, Dave. It's great to be here.
Stephen, much of the thinking, and at least much of what I'll call the emotional orientation or spiritual direction, let's say, of the book, derived from The War of Art. So who was the audience that you had in mind for Do the Work?
It was written for anybody that is not part of an external structure that has to generate their own motivation and their own validation and their own reinforcement, primarily entrepreneurs and artists. The War of Art was written for writers only. It was about facing the blank page and all the forms of self-sabotage that we writers use to procrastinate and stop ourselves from doing what we know we need to do. Seth Godin invited me to do one of these books for the Domino Project, and he wanted it to be a next phase after the War of Art. So that was how Do the Work came about.
Now, in the About the Book preface, you note that the articulation of this book is in the lexicon of a writer, one who conceives and constructs plays, novels, or screenplays. Did you approach the work this way because it just came naturally to you?
Yes, but also I think the metaphor of the writer is something that a lot of people can relate to. Whether you have your own small business or you're a manager in a corporation or something like that, you can relate to the idea of starting from scratch, facing a blank page, facing your fears, pushing through a long project with perseverance and stamina, and then, as Seth would say, shipping at the end.
Every great story has an antagonist or a villain. Now, yours in this book is Resistance. Can you give us a brief description of Resistance?
Let me put it this way. As a writer, you learn right away that your brain will concoct a million excuses not to sit down and face the blank page. And it's the same sort of force that will stop you if you've ever joined a gym and discovered that you weren't actually going to the gym a month later, or if you've ever tried to start a practice of yoga or martial arts or meditation and found that you've bailed out on that after a while. The force that stops you from doing that which you know you ought to do is what I call resistance.
Right.
I certainly have found in my own life that overcoming that is really what being a writer is all about. The writing part is easy. The hard part is sitting down to write. And extrapolating from that, starting your own business is not so hard. Coming up with the idea is easy. It's actually doing it that's the hard part.
And of course, in opposition to the villain Resistance are our allies. And your list of allies includes some that some people might find surprising, if downright counterintuitive. Now, for instance, how can stupidity and stubbornness and blind faith be our allies against resistance?
One of the things about being an entrepreneur is that you need to be ignorant and arrogant. You have to underestimate the difficulties of the project. Imagine if Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak had known what they were going to be up against when they were putting together a computer in their garage, or what Charles Lindbergh would have thought when he concocted the idea to fly the Atlantic solo. You've got to be dumb. You've got to be stupid. You have to not allow yourself to think too much about a project, or you'll chicken out. So a little bit of stupidity is a good thing. And blind faith is another.
Mm.
It's the ignorance and arrogance scenario where if you're going to start any kind of ambitious venture, if you look at it rationally, you'll probably talk yourself out of it. You can come up with a million reasons not to do it. And certainly your friends and family can come up with a million reasons not to do it. So blind faith is a potent ally in any kind of ambitious undertaking.
Now, you obviously value speed as an essential element of project initiation and completion.
Yes, particularly in the writer's lexicon, in a first draft, let's say, or in any enterprise where you're starting and trying to get the ball rolling, the enemy is resistance. It's the fear of failure, procrastination, self-sabotage, self-doubt.
Right.
A great antidote to that is to plunge in without any self-censorship and just move as fast as you can from A to Z. For instance, in writer's terms, a first draft. Sometimes people will take years. You know people, I'm sure, that have been working for years on their PhD dissertation and never get to the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And how many novelists have started books and bailed out halfway through? So speed in a first draft, in my opinion, is a great ally. Start at page one, go as fast as you can to the end of it without self-censorship, without self-criticism.
Yeah.
And then at least, even if you've got something lousy, you've got something. From that point, you're no longer writing, you're rewriting. And there's all the difference in the world to that.
You also advocate swinging for the seats, which I would think many old schoolers in a conservative corporate setting would find dangerous. Why is this important?
My first job was in advertising in New York. I worked at Benton & Bowles. And I remember that I used to bring in ideas to my boss that were so tiny, they used to get absolutely outraged. I mean, kick me back to my cubicle and tell me, come back with something big. Think outside the standard parameters. Now, in a corporate setting, this might actually be a negative, because sometimes our corporate bosses don't want anything big.
Definitely.
But certainly in an entrepreneurial setting, it's great to swing for the seats, not to hold back, to come up with the biggest idea that you can. Don't allow fear to make you overly modest. It's better to strike out going for a home run than to hit some dribbler to the second baseman.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't got the power from the beginning, you're never going to generate it.
All right. What are your thoughts on the phrase, the seduction of research?
Again, resistance is all those seductive forces that will pull us away from doing our work. And sometimes research can be a form of resistance.
And why do you feel that way?
Because rather than actually start in on whatever it is we need to do, we'll do research for months and months and months and months. And I've found as a writer that you don't need the research. The research can come later.
Sure.
The important thing is to face the demon, face the fear, face the tendency to self-sabotage, just plunge in and do the research as you go. Don't do it at the start. Research can become resistance.
Got it. And what guidance can you provide to a person who has started a project with great momentum, only to hit the wall a few weeks into it?
This, of course, happens to everybody. And in fact, Do the Work, the book we're talking about here today, takes a project or any entrepreneurial venture from the beginning all the way to the end. And what it does is lay out the predictable resistance points that happen along the way. You've just mentioned one, where we get a few weeks into it, we lose momentum.
Exactly.
It doesn't seem so exciting anymore. Now we're into the real hard work of it.
So how do you address that?
The answer to that is you have to be prepared for that. It will happen in any project, and there are a bunch of other resistance points up ahead, too. But if you know that you're going to hit the doldrums at a certain point, then you know that at that point you have to gear up mentally and just push through that. It's like running a marathon. You know that at 24 miles, you're going to hit the wall. And you just know that's coming. But if you've got that already in your mind, when it happens to you, you're not shocked and you're not overwhelmed, and you're able to rally your forces and push through it.
Right.
There's no real substitute for simple willpower and perseverance and that marathon runner's mentality to keep going.
Mm-hmm. Now, Seth Godin has made a big deal about shipping, and you also make quite a big deal about it in Do the Work. Why do you think people have so much trouble finishing projects?
First, let me say that that was my bete noire as a beginning writer, and it took me years to get over this.
That's interesting.
It's an absolutely predictable phenomenon. And the reason is that when you finish, when you ship, as Seth says, you expose yourself to judgment. Let's say you've invented the iPhone and you've got it sitting in the packing crates ready to go to all the stores. That's what he calls shipping. You put your project out there in the real world where you can fail, where you can be ridiculed, where you can be humiliated, where all kinds of bad things can happen. It's natural to be afraid of that and to not want rejection in the real world. That's a predictable resistance point that you can be mentally prepared for it, and then you ship.
All right.
But it's not only fear of failure, it's fear of success, which is a whole other deep topic. We're not only afraid that we might fall on our faces, but a lot of us, including me, are terrified that we might actually have a hit.
Yeah.
And that really scares us.
Well, Stephen, do you think that explains what we see in not only the entertainment, but the business world, the one-hit wonder?
There's a lot to that, Dave.
Okay.
For instance, Elizabeth Gilbert gave a wonderful speech at the TED conference a couple of years ago, where she talked about how her first book, Eat, Pray, Love, was such a hit, and she had set the bar so high for herself that she was terrified to do her sophomore book, because how could she live up to that?
Absolutely.
That does contribute to one-hit wonders. People are just afraid that they can't live up to the great thing they did once. But of course, if you look at the whole project in terms of a career, if you're a singer or a songwriter and you think in terms of 25 albums that you're going to release over the course of a career, or if you're an entrepreneur and you're going to have business, it's a resistance point that you have to overcome mentally and know that there's not just going to be a second enterprise, but there'll be a third and a fourth and a fifth, and you just keep going.
Right, right. Stephen, before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yes. Do the Work is only available on Amazon.com. It's not in bookstores. That's all. I just wanted to let everybody know that.
We've been speaking to Stephen Pressfield, author of the new book, Via the Domino Project, Do the Work. Stephen, thank you so much for being with us on Edgewise today.
Thank you, Dave.
The American Management Association has an international presence, adding value to your organization by involving you in a global community of peers and practitioners via one of the world's most sophisticated knowledge exchange networks. Today, AMA's global reach extends from Management Center Europe in Brussels to Management Center de Mexico in Mexico City, from the Canadian Management Center in Toronto to AMA Japan in Tokyo. And since 1995, AMA has served the Chinese market through the Asia-Pacific Management Institute in Shanghai. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.